You're listening to Alan James on Circle of White Light Radio and People's Internet Radio, focusing on solutions and thinking different.
Hello everyone, good evening and welcome to Circle of White Light Radio with myself, Alan James. I'm just going to turn down the mic there, it's a bit loud. I'm just watching the volume levels there. Good evening, it's Sunday the 19th of April 2020 and we have a busy show tonight. We have Liam from THI Scotland and Lynn, who's the CEO from the Love Group. And we're going to be talking about solutions tonight and the things that Liam and Lynn have been involved in. And the things they've been doing. They've been doing fantastic work over in Scotland. So we're going to be talking to Liam and Lynn in a few minutes when I go through a few bits and pieces. But before that, let's find out what the communication channels are.
The communication channels are email, contact us at circleofwhitelight.com, by phone 046-927-1212, or sign up to our newsletter via our website at circleofwhitelight.com.
Okay, as you know, the website is www.circleofwhitelight.com, not circleofwhitelightradio.com, just circleofwhitelight.com. And also you'll find us on Patreon, which is patreon.com/COWLR, and also on PayPal. A big thank you for everybody who donates to Circle of White Light Radio and through PayPal as well. The funding is, it's brilliant that the money comes in. We do help using the People's Club money and also the donations through Circle of White Light to help local groups and people. So a big, big thank you for doing that. I'm sorry I can't thank everybody individually with the donations coming in. It just gets, a lot of emails coming in. I'd probably spend half the day doing it. So that's why I'm saying on the show now tonight, thank you very much for your donations. It's only €1 a month. If you can afford €1 a month, that's fantastic if you can do that, because it does help the groups and the people that we donate to. Okay, right, couple of things we have to go through, things that happened during the week. There's loads of things going on. We're in the eye of the storm at the moment, so it's important that people stay balanced, 45-55, as I've said before on the show, and just become an observer. We really are. The energies are ramping up. The Schumann frequency was 110 the other day. So a lot of people feeling changes, a lot of things going on, so you know, we have to hang in there. Don't let it go drive you too mad. Okay, just the first thing on the list is, it was in the independent.ie. And we have to obviously talk about the virus because it's affecting us all on a daily basis. So we might as well touch base on it. The coronavirus Ireland, no end to restrictions until a vaccine for COVID-19 is found. Yeah, okay, well, we know who's behind this. Ireland is likely to remain in virtual lockdown for much of 2020 to fight the coronavirus. It has been starkly warned. Yes, I'm sure the mainstream media do that. Hopes have been dashed that some of the toughest restrictions on social and sporting life will be lifted by summer, but there should be a return to relative normality soon. Now, at the moment, we all know that, the whole idea of pushing the vaccine, we know who's behind it. It's Bill Gates. He's come out in the media and said that he wants to vaccinate 7 billion people. I mean, ridiculous. Talk about a megalomaniac. And of course, if you think about it, you know, years ago, most of you know I'm an IT guy. And when I was in the IT industry, we also had this suspicion that the antivirus companies would actually write these viruses. And they'd always say, oh, this is a virus that could potentially go out there, but it's not out there in the world. Okay? So this is what they would say. But it's obviously in their interest to leak out one or two viruses, because the antivirus software justifies their existence, you see? If there's no viruses, then they don't need to design antivirus software and sell antivirus software. So problem, reaction, solution with the viruses. So why would Bill Gates not be any different, where he creates the virus and apparently does is information saying he is tied to the Wuhan biolab regarding the virus. He has some dealings with it. If it's not shares, it's something else. This is what the speculation is. Anyway, so he's involved. Say he's involved with the virus. And then he's obviously involved with the vaccine company to supply the solution. So, you know, I mean, it's not rocket science. It's great business. How much money is he going to make with the vaccines if he's also involved with getting the virus out there as well? You know, this is what's been, you know, said. But he has admitted that in public and on the media that he wants everybody vaccinated. And of course, there are a number of governments around the country who are falling for this con and trying to push it. Now, you know, at the end of the day, will they be kicking down your door and holding you down to give you a vaccine? No, I don't think that's going to happen. But I think what they will try and do, if we let them do it, because it's people power at the end of the day, is what they'll try and do is they'll say, right, you need to have a vaccination certificate before you go traveling or before you go on the bus or before you go shopping or something, whatever. And this is probably what their plan is. So they'll force you to have it, you know. So, yeah, it's not good. But hopefully, you know, we will all kind of wake up to it and we'll all put a hold to it, you know. And, of course, what they did the other day in Ireland, if people aren't aware of this, they flew people in abroad to work in a company that grows strawberries. So they flew these people in from Bulgaria to pick strawberries. And although they said, and there seems to be no respect for the scandemic, the whole idea of social distancing, but they were filing out of the airport side by side. And they didn't seem to have any masks on or anything, all getting on buses and stuff. Now, the video footage is on Facebook. So how can they say, in one hand, we all have to social distance, and then all these people are coming in from Bulgaria? By the way, the person who's involved with the company, Keelings, I think they're called, is a friend of Simon Coveney, who's a government minister. You know, quite convenient that, really, isn't it? Now, they might use the excuse that, oh, Irish people weren't interested. Yeah, right, they probably would say that. Slave labour, probably more, by the sound of things, anyway. And the other thing I have here is theirishexaminer.com. Vitamin D. Now, we know vitamin D is very good for you. You get that from the sun. Obviously, going out and, you know, put your face to the sun. Vitamin D can help build resistance to COVID-19. Two critical Irish scientific studies have found. One of the studies published in the Irish Medical Journal calls for the immediate vitamin D supplementation of hospital inpatients, nursing home residents and older people. It suggests that vitamin D supplementation is the wider adult in the wider adult population, particularly in frontline healthcare workers, may further limit infection and flatten the COVID-19 curve. Researchers from Technology University Dublin and Trinity College Dublin recommend that Irish adults take 20 to 50 micrograms of vitamin D every day. Vitamin D deficiency is prevalent in Ireland, especially in older people, and may significantly increase the risk and severity of viral respiratory infections. The authors believe vitamin D supplementation was important in the absence of a vaccine and evidence of effective drug treatment for COVID-19. And it says, no, that's it. I think that's it. Yeah. So vitamin D. So you need to go out and do your 2 mile kilometre. If we get the sun over here in Ireland, I suppose it's a bit like Scotland. It's very rare to see the old sun. But when you do see it, go out there and, you know, go out to the garden and sit down and enjoy the sun, because that's the vitamin D that you need. Okay, so just my week, just something very quick. I've noticed more and more people attacking each other on social media, and it's just getting very nasty. I mean, as I say, the energies are changing and people are kind of getting hyper these days. I think there's a lot of attacks going on. We know there are people are paid trolls and shills, and there's nothing you can do about these people. You know, they're just materialistic and greedy and getting paid money to do this. But there are people who just feel they have to attack someone because they have a difference of opinion. You know, and to be honest with you, I'm shaking my head at how humanity has got worse rather than better. There is a massive level of attacks going on, and it's just not on. You know, Trolls and Shills, they get paid. You know, that's their job, if you want to call it that. So you have to accept that. But other people are just not getting it. It's just unreal. So sorry to see that. But then again, it has to get darker before it gets brighter. And as I say, we are in the storm at the moment. So stay calm, 45-55. Okay, I'm going to bring our guests in. And I have two bios. So the first one's Liam. Liam's been on the show before. So he's an old hand at this. Liam spent his childhood in farming and then went on to complete an engineering apprenticeship in precision manufacturing. Liam started his first company at the age of 22 and currently the CEO of six companies. The engineering companies mostly developed new products and are currently developing clean energy technology. Liam is in THI Scotland and is helping all THI groups with the cooperative model and the Life Force Energy Restoration Plan. Due to ongoing difficulty with running corporate businesses over the years and having to experience bankruptcy and closing his companies, he realised we need to run companies differently. Liam started a new company to support failing businesses and business startups, along with developing a cooperative business model. He has saved dozens of companies and thousands of jobs by using his experience while considerably improving people's working life. In the evenings, Liam has been helping people as an energy healer and psychic medium for the last 8 years and has helped over 1,000 people, mostly with deep emotional issues, at no charge, but trying to promote the pay it forward model. You know, great stuff there, Liam. This experience has helped with doing things differently in the workplace to identify problems and help staff. Liam believes we need to adapt much more of a holistic approach in the workplace and develop emotional intelligence in every business. I'll also add critical thinking and future thinking. Brilliant, Liam. That's great stuff. And Lynn Bell, she's the CEO of the Love Group. Lynn Bell is the founder and CEO of the Love Group, a social business that funds its outreach services for vulnerable individuals through its cooperative through its corporate services. Love's outreach programs include education, employability, social care, physical health programs, while its corporate services include professional training and recruitment. Lynn is the partner of Scottish police detective John Bell and mother to three boys, Joshua, Curry and Max. Through her working life, she has become a role model for women in business and an advocate for education and social justice. Growing up in Airdrie, North Lanarkshire, get that right, Lynn has three sisters and believes her interest in business came from helping her mother and father in their small businesses, which gave her the founding and drive required to succeed. After leaving school, she worked in her early years before she became a mother. She then went on to work with very chaotic young people who are moving through the criminal justice system. Lynn always felt an affinity with her young people, and this is where her passion grew into sheer determination for social change and ensuring vulnerable people could access education. Lynn went back to college, which accessed her into Strathclyde University on a sociology and politics degree in 2002. Since then, Lynn has completed a new qualification every year, ranging from compliance awards in social care, leadership and project management. She joined Scottish Fire and Rescue in 2009 as part of a childhood dream to become a firefighter and became Probationer of the Year and won a START award. Lynn was promoted to crew manager and became an assessor and verifier for SQA awards within the fire service. This learning development experience allowed her to a varied background required to found the Love Group in 2014. Lynn has been involved in community programs across Scotland, and under her leadership as CEO, the growth of Love Group has skyrocketed. She is a master practitioner of neuro-linguistic programming NLP, and both this and ongoing personal development have had a huge influence on her life. Lynn has continued her efforts to support and inspire young people and is a board member of Young Enterprise Lanarkshire. Good evening, folks. How are you doing?
Good.
Hi, Lynn.
All right, Lynn. Hi. And Lynn, how are you doing? Listen, thanks a lot for coming on. And wow, both of you have a massive bio there. Fantastic information on there and some fantastic things you've been doing. Now, obviously, myself and Liam have been busy doing our bit. And we had, myself, you and Liam, Lynn, had a Skype there, I think, a couple of weeks ago. And we having a general chit-chat. And it's amazing the work you're doing. And I know, and probably you're probably the same as Liam, but I know Liam is a very modest guy and a very humble guy. And I know he does. And I'm sure he might be cringing when I'm reading out his bio because he probably doesn't want to say the stuff he's done. But I did ask him for his bio, and you're probably the same. You know, some people don't like saying, well, I don't really want to say it, you know. But, you know, at the end of the day, well done to the both of you.
Thanks, Alan.
Thanks very much.
Okay, well, listen, I'm going to start off with Liam because Liam introduced Lynn to me. So let's kick off, Liam, your background. You've got, you know, a number of companies there under your belt. We are going through hard times at the moment. I know you've been very busy sorting things out. And the main thing is that, apart from, we'll get into your healing and the psychic side and everything else, but from a business point of view, what you've found out over the years is that the current corporate hierarchical system does not work. And you've started to change your business model to a more cooperative system. Can you tell us about that and tell us how you're getting on with that?
Yeah, sure. Well, the cooperative model, well, I know we've covered some of this before, but I'll just give some highlights of it again. You know, after going through a number of years ago, watching businesses struggle, own companies failing for no bad reasons, you know, it's always been set up that they're designed. The core pilot, as they call it, model, is designed to fail. It's to harvest more energy, it's to harvest money. And even the companies that are successful from it, it's always at the detriment of other businesses. So corporate businesses, as I say, they've been harvesting more energy. You've always got to, you know, things like the quality of a product, because you're always scrimping and scraping to pay the bills. So the quality of product or a service always goes down. The greed at the higher end of the businesses with fancy cars or salaries are 10 times, 20 times, 50 times more than the people at the bottom of the tree. And they're getting, you know, minimum wage if they're lucky. So it's really unfair. People become just numbers, you know, and think stupid things like 0-hour contracts and things like that. Nobody can live their life with these things. So it's, you know, it's been getting worse and worse over the years. I think the numbers are roughly 88% of corporate business startups close within the first 5 years. But 44% of cooperative models stay afloat after the first 5 years. So that's like, you know, a huge difference. So we have to do things differently. And the cooperative model, to me, is just a common sense. You know, start treating people and suppliers and customers in an entirely different way. But it needs a whole new model to be built now. As you know, we've been working on this for some time with the business planning team. We are already implementing a whole load of things here in our own companies. And that's about, you know, just looking after people. And I know Lynn's doing the same. You know, start looking after people, start paying them better, you know, none of this minimum wage anywhere. But also no crazy salaries either, no fancy cars, no first-class travel, all these silly things. And then with the product or the service, yeah, well, let's start making that as best as it possibly can be. You know, when you're producing something, make it last. Mostly it's manufacturing we're involved in, product development. But products are actually designed to fail. You know, I use the example of a washing machine all the time. You know, your grandmother had a washing machine that lasted for 30 years plus, you know, never broke down. Nowadays, you get a washing machine that lasts you maybe 3 to 5 years, depending on how long the warranty is, and it fails. It's designed to fail. It's a throwaway society, and that's what we've got to get away from. And if we start building cooperative businesses to put out high-quality products and services, well, everyone else will need to follow suit. So start looking after the staff better. You know, the staff need to be absolute priority in any of these businesses. And I think it needs to be, any cooperative business needs to be 100% employee-owned. Now, whether you're the managing director or the cleaner, you should have an equal share in that business. I think this is really important because as soon as it's not equal, everyone will look to the larger shareholder to be taking responsibility. It's human nature. So we'll try and that's where we need to get away from. But the psychological effect of having people as well, they own part of that company. You have a total different attitude going to your work. Productivity will go through, your self-worth, you know, automatically triggers drastic improvements, you know, and the welfare of the people, their attitude, their just absolutely everything's affected. And as I say, it needs to be a much fairer pay structure from the bottom to the top. And nothing wrong with people getting paid more for more responsibility, but not 10 times more. And, you know, all the jobs need done in any company. So whether you're cleaning the floors or, you know, managing at the top end of the company, both those jobs equally need done. So, you know, why should it be minimum wage? So if we can get the balance better, you know, maybe 2 or 3 times the salary from the bottom to the top, but none of this 10, 20, 30 times different. And that would, you know, drastically improve the life of people that can maybe only work part-time or doing any of the jobs, you know. Another thing thing needs to be done is people need to have an equal voice in these companies and opportunity to speak out. To, you know, I think every single person needs to have a voice. Not everyone will want one, but to have that opportunity and speak out. And things like promotion should be from the bottom up, not the top down. You know, that always works better. It's something that works really, really well. And everyone's had an equal opportunity to, you know, get that chance of that promotion or to get a chance to vote somebody into that position. Really, really important. And that works very, very well. Limiting profits in the company as well. To say 10-15%. So say 15%, we at the end of the year, 5% goes to the staff as a dividend. 5% should go back to the People's Club if that's what's funded the project in the first place. And that supports them in the future as well. And then I would suggest that 5% goes into the local community and the staff in the company will decide where that goes. So they're getting back involved back into the local communities again. And I think that's really important because that's where we're going wrong. There's no community spirit anywhere. We need to bring that back so the staff could hopefully get involved in that. Working hours is a huge one. We changed our working hours drastically here. Most people work a 4-day week or less. And we're really flexible at hours. It's worked really well. We have less sickness. What a difference it makes to people. But with the new cooperative model, we really want to be working, you know, 25 to 30 hours a week, you know, instead of the 6 days, 7 days, 50, 60, 70 plus hours, you know, we get the same amount of money for working those hours. And that's also creating jobs as well. So if we can get rid of all the crazy costs of the business, that allows for people to be paid the same or more. We're working a lot less. So then they've got time for themselves, their families, and hopefully the local community. People don't have the time just now, and I think most people genuinely want to make a difference, but they don't have the time for that, so that's what we need to try and support. Also being paid in full when they're off sick or a family member's off sick, or, you know, you need to support people. What we find here is we pay our staff in full and take a great interest in an issue. Now, it doesn't matter whether it's them that's ill or not, it could be their child that's ill, but they still can't be at their work because they've got to support the wife or the husband or the children or even a next-door neighbour that they've been trying to help and help out. So I think the more we can do that, the better. And there is obviously restrictions financially, but if everyone goes to this kind of model and this is the way we build going forward, people will have to follow suit. It doesn't matter what companies are out there, you will compete with them if you're making the product last twice as long or given double the length of warranty or the service for less amount of money, whatever it might be, they have to follow suit because all people will genuinely, you know, it's all word of mouth for us. We can get staff no problem because they're hearing about how we're treating people. And engineers are really difficult to get in Scotland. Very, very difficult. But we've not got a problem getting them. We've got a waiting list because people want to be involved in that kind of company. So it's proven that it works. It works very, very well. There's a lot to the cooperative model. You know, Thomas has done his second video that he's been trying to get to for a while, so I would recommend anybody has a listen to that. And we, myself and yourself, Alan's probably going to be putting these documents out shortly for people's participation in the cooperative model. It'd be great for everyone, whether part of THI or not, anyone who wants a copy of that can maybe help us and put some suggestions in. I'm just running over some of the highlights of why a cooperative model, but there really, there's a lot more to it, and it, you know, it just works. I've been blessed here in Scotland to work with probably one of the world leaders, a chap called John Housegill, and a cooperative model. He was behind an organisation called GORE, W.L. GORE, Gore-Tex Material, people usually know them by. And, you know, they really, they were voted the best employer in the world for, I don't know, many times over a 15-year period, how they looked after staff, how they engaged them. And they learned a huge amount. So we're taking all the cream of that, all the juicy bits, and building that into the model here. And there's simple things that can be done. Like, and it's, again, how you treat people. You know, one of the examples always sticks in the back of my head here is, you know, instead of giving someone a role and saying, this is your job and this is what to do, if you don't do that and you say to them, well, give us a commitment and what you can do, this is roughly what we need, and people will overcommit in the things they're comfortable with and undercommit in the things they're not comfortable with. Productivity goes up. This is the measurement he's managed to find over the last decade, 23% automatically, just by treating people differently and saying, what are you willing to do, you know?
Okay.
Instead of telling people, you know?
Let me recap on that. I'm hearing an echo there coming in. Okay. Let me just recap on that. So for people listening in, the cooperative model, so the current system, the corporate structure at the moment with the hierarchy, the way it works, right, is that you go in and you get paid a salary and you have to do your 5 days, probably more. And then if you lose your job or something happens or you get sick or a family member gets sick, not only do you have to worry about that person or yourself, but you have to worry about how you're going to pay your mortgage. And you don't have a say in how the company's run because you're just an employee. That's the current corporate structure model. And, of course, all the profits. The reason why the MD has a house in Mauritius and he has his Maserati outside is because the actual profit on the goods are ridiculously high. It's too much. Right, so the cooperative model, on the other hand, you have employees who are part of the business. They have a say in the business. They work 4 days a week. They, if they're sick, they're paid full salary, whether they're sick or somebody's sick or whatever, but you don't have to worry about you paying your bills or mortgage. You're paid full salary. And the profits are kept down to a minimum, so there's a higher chance of more business coming in because you'll be very competitive, plus 5% of the actual profit goes towards dividends for the staff at Christmas. Why would... You know, I mean, if you heard that this company was offering this compared to what you're working at now, you'd probably run at the company, go straight for the company and put your CV in and work for that company. Now, I know you said, Liam, that you've had people being offered money on a higher salary. They've been offered more money, but they said that they're staying because of the way they've been treated.
Absolutely. I mean, only just last week, again, we had another member of staff. And he just shared it with us and he said, you know, I've been offered a job here, one of our competitors. And they were offered him £7,000 a year, which is a huge amount more to go and work than he's maybe on a salary of £30,000, you know. And there's another £7,000. He says, I'll never go. He says, you supported us when my wife was not well. And, you know, I just love working here and we feel valued. And that's a key part of it, you know. It's a pleasing thank you costs nothing, a genuine interest in the staff. I've always said it's so important. I just think there's not enough emotional intelligence in business, you know, and that's where we're trying to bring in, you know, encourage people with use their intuition, you know, try and feel what's going on with people, understand them, get to know each and every member of staff in your production line or whatever office you're in or whatever it might be. And it just works really well.
Yeah, the problem I have, and we talked about this, Liam, is that, you know, I've worked in the corporate world for over 20 years, and the problem is that most of the people I come across are business managers. They're not people managers. You know, in the 20 plus years I worked in the corporate world, on one hand I could count the people managers. They were all these managers and supervisors were all business based. business brained, you know, left brain. And when it came to the right brain, taking care of people and being people, they weren't. They couldn't deal with it. They weren't trained to do it. And it wasn't in their system. It's all business focused. And I think this is where the cooperative model comes in, that we're going to be switching it over from the left to the right, and also taking in, you know, the business has to be managed, fair enough, but the people have to be managed as well and respected. And I think that's the problem I came across in my career anyway, was the issue there. But I do want to bring Lynn in, but what I want you to do, and we'll talk about the spiritual stuff later, can you tell us how you met Lynn, and then we'll bring Lynn in and we'll talk to Lynn about the love group.
Yeah, so I met Lynn, I think, 3 years ago, Lynn, is that correct?
Something like that.
Yep. Three years ago, I was doing some helicopter lessons, actually. I've got a passion to get my helicopter license. Not that I've done many because they're so expensive. But so I was there. Lynn was the firewoman on duty at the private place. At the time, the weather was pretty poor. So I was sitting chatting away, and as I do regularly, I started picking up messages for complete strangers. So, but I always trust it, so I started passing on some messages to Lynn. And we got chatting, and suggested that she should come along for a bit of a session, healing, and a reading, which became really, really powerful for Lynn and myself. We realised we could be working together in other ways. How could we, as Lynn keeps changing, how are we going to change the world here? And and I seen at that time, now Lynn had her organisation on the go already, which is very small at the time, and during that reading, I'm sure Lynn won't mind me sharing this, I said, this is going to be much bigger than you realise, so much bigger, but there's blockages here, there's things that we need to work on, as we all do. So we worked on a lot of that. We became very good friends very quickly, and a lot of trust there, and then we started getting involved with Love Learning at the time. That's the charitable side, I think. And you know, I went down to meet the team of people there, and I was just blown away, absolutely blown away, the energy in the room, the commitment of these people, a lot of them volunteers, just wanting to make a difference. So it was an absolute breath of fresh air meeting someone like that, and I was just blown away with Lynn's energy and her drive, given the difficulties that she's been through to try and make all this happen. So but from then on, we started working together and seeing how we could work, and THI came along later than that. Lynn's part of THI Scotland as well. So THI in Scotland is like a think group, and we've got all these other things going on that most of them already were going on. But it's great to bring together the THI and hear what everybody else is doing, start sharing that. So basically, we're putting under the umbrella of THI very gradually. But most of the organisations were still running. And Lynn has just blown me away since. They've been, I'll let her tell you in a minute herself, but they've grown to quite a considerable rate, and I've seen fairly recently that that organisation will actually end up growing to over 2,000 staff. So that's just an intuitive hint, pick up I got. I was right with the other stuff, so okay. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, that's Lynn.
Brilliant. Lynn, well, come in and tell us. I mean, you're obviously a powerhouse and a woman that gets things done. And every time I've spoken to Elaine, well, on a number of occasions, he does really credit you with the work that you've done. And you just seem to be able to pull it out of the bag. And you have nothing, and you create this thing out of nothing. So tell us about how you started the Love Group and your enthusiasm and your interest in getting this started.
So I suppose it's hard to resonate with that. I just feel like an ordinary person who wanted to do something half decent. I suppose at the time I worked with very vulnerable people and felt as if they always get a bit of a raw deal. I felt that some of the people, the young people that I worked with particularly, didn't learn or didn't come out with a qualification. And because at the time I was in the fire service and I was starting to move through a process where I was getting involved heavily in learning development and new compliance awards that were coming out, like SVQs, and we were teaching people how to learn holistically. And for me, it was a light bulb moment at that point where I thought we could teach children holistically, step outside the curriculum, step outside the box. And I suppose at that time, that was just an idea. And from that idea, it started off as Liberate Learning. I wanted to create a charitable arm, which I had to change the name to Love Learning. And I suppose the Love Group was born from there. Love Learning was providing or bridging the gap between social care and education for the most vulnerable people. And it was so hard to fund. We couldn't get access to funding, generally because it was a statutory provision and that it should have been the local authority that was paying for people's education. But there were so many people that missed out for a variety of reasons. I wanted to bring together a crisis response service that would support people's mental health, that would improve their own mindsets, that for me, everybody has to start thinking outside the box. They have to start to grow mentally, to think about their lives in a completely different way. So I wanted to teach young people all about their minds. I wanted to help support them, and then I wanted to formally educate them. So I brought together a SQA centre, which is a Scottish Qualifications Authority. We became a centre. Had no idea. One of my first books, because I kept diaries of what I was doing, the question in my first book was, what is an SQA centre? Even though I was working as an assessor and a verifier at the time, I still wasn't sure how to run a centre. I'd never done it before. So I don't want it to come across that I had all this kind of background knowledge or I knew what I was doing, really. And because it was so difficult to fund, everybody loved the idea, everybody thought it was amazing, but it was so difficult to fund. So I went out and started two businesses that would fund it, called Love Corporate and Love Care. And the profits for the two companies fund the charitable services. And I suppose for me, it's a socially responsible business model that pays back, almost like the law of attraction, or trying to put good out in the world, and it comes back to you 100 times over. So,
so what you're saying is, with the right intent, if you put the right intent behind it, and it's for the benefit of the people, that energy there will drive it. It'll help you in a big way.
Yes. So I suppose, like in the beginning, I should have gave up 100 knockbacks ago. I was told that nobody would fund it. Everybody needed it, but we couldn't do it. And I was just so determined that there were so many young people needed it that I was going to deliver it, regardless, or we'd find a way to fund it. We would just find a solution. And I think because the intention was so good, for me personally, I was reading about the law of attraction. I was starting to improve my own personal development, and I was starting to meditate and things like that. Like, I suppose on a personal level, I was really starting to evolve. And as the more and more I applied that to the model that I was trying to build in a business perspective, the more the blocks started to come off. So I suppose round about the time when I met Liam, the business was really, really struggling. I was worried about payroll. I was worried about bringing in funding. Well, we couldn't bring in funding, if I'm honest. We brought in very little. And every time I felt as though I tried to do something or tried to go on somewhere, there was always something that came in our way, or something that prevented the money from flowing almost.
Yeah.
And we had such great outcomes. We had volunteers and the most amazing workers on the planet, hands down, were providing services and outcomes that were amazing. We could evidence it, but yet we would go to places like the lottery and show the outcomes of what we were doing, and it was just so difficult. And round about the time that I met Liam, I was a firefighter and I was doing overtime shifts. I suppose my perspective's a wee bit different from Liam's. I was doing an overtime shift at Cumbernauld Airport for helicopters, and Liam had come in to do a test, no, a pilot's license, and he had his kids with him, and I was obviously there as a firefighter. He knew I was his fire cover for the day, and there was this big massive rain cloud come over, and it was, the helicopters were grounded and nobody was able to fly. So Liam started talking to the pilots, and he was talking about his life and stuff like that, and I was just listening in the background, and he came in and said, and sat down beside me, and he said, "Is your grand called Maud?" And I almost fell off my chair because it's a name that you would never ever be able to come up with. And I said, and he went, oh, he said, I'm really sorry. He says, I'm a psychic medium and sometimes I get messages through and she's asking me to ask you about your business. And during that time for the business, I was so worried because we were struggling to bring in money, we were struggling to pay our payroll and stuff like that. And it was just soul destroying. I was so determined that I wasn't giving up, but I just didn't know what to do. And Liam had said, well, I work in a lot of businesses. Your gran's telling me I have to speak to you, so I'd really love to meet up and maybe I could help you out in business. So, and I suppose from there, it was a bit of a journey for me. It was about opening up my own mindset and realising that I was blocking a lot of the things that were going on and a lot of the things that I was able to manifest myself and that I was able to bring things forward if I could just release the stress, the worry, the anxiety. Everything that I worried about, I blocked and stopped it from coming. And as soon as I not just realised that, because I think sometimes when people who understand manifestation or who understand the law of attraction know that they've not to worry about things because you bring in what you worry about. And you can tell yourself that you don't worry about that, but in actual fact, you do. Mm. So it's really, it's almost like a cycle where you're trying to stop yourself from doing it. And when I finally stopped and let go, everything just came in. I was able to manifest. And I believe that with the right intention and that if you genuinely want to do good in the world, that that will come back to you 100 times over.
I think that's where it's going, Lynn, because time and time again, and we can touch base with Liam on this, but something you said there when you first started was the SRI. And I want people to remember this buzzword because it was actually Mark from the THI Business Group that told us there in the meeting during the week. So thanks to Mark for that. The SRI is socially responsible investment. And he was saying that if you get people, if you have an idea and people want to invest in your business and are purely coming in for the profit and the greed, then that's not an SRI. They should be coming in to invest in your business, not only for the profit, but to help society and help humanity for the better. So SRI, socially responsible investment. And Lynn made it, Lynn said it earlier on there, which I think is important to say. Now, Lynn, have you looked at things? I'm sure you probably have. Have you looked at things like The Secret or read the book or seen the DVD?
Yes. So I suppose that was one of the first personal development books that I read. And for me, I was sitting in a fire station when I was reading it amongst some big hairy men that were quite cynical and took the mince when I was reading it. And what's that all about? And I thought to myself, well, I'm just going to pretend. When I started to read the book, I thought I'll just pretend that it works. And I went round. I was grateful for the sky, I was grateful for the birds, I was grateful for the trees, the air that I breathe, absolutely everything. And a couple hours later I got an overtime shout, which are like hen's teeth in the fire service in Scotland. So the next day I got another overtime shout, and then again the next day, which is absolutely unheard of. So I was laughing and saying to all the guys, well, there must be something in it because I've been grateful for 3 days and everything's just attracting to me. And I suppose it sparked my interest enough that I started to look into the law of attraction, manifestation, connection, and all around about energy and how to actually improve your business. So for me, having a socially responsible business model and going out to, so I went out and spoke to some young entrepreneurs, and what I was basically saying to them is, if your intention is to become rich or your intention is to become a really successful business person, and you do that and create it on a socially responsible model, if you go out and you help people or you do good, you can still make money, you can still have a wonderful lifestyle, but you do good at the same time.
Of course, and you can do pay it forward, can't you, as a business model?
Yep. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be a charity. You don't have to be a social enterprise. Two of my companies are limited companies. One of them is a charity, and I pay my profits to my charity. I've essentially became my own funder, and I don't have to answer to anybody, but all the red tape, the bureaucracy, I do what I want. I go and I fund, I put my money where I want to put it, and I'm able to help people that where it really, really matters. And I think that when you're serving others, there is no better way to sleep straight in your bed at night.
I think it's brilliant from doing initially with the People's Club over here in Ireland. The People's Club have donated just from December just up to about €2,000. And the actual energy that comes from that, knowing that you're helping people in a very service to others in that way with the right intent. Because to me, anyway, everything is intent. If you're going to be doing something to try and get something back, or you're doing it for the wrong reasons, it's just not going to work. And I've always kind of believed that when you do something with the right intent, that energy, that karma is going to come back in some way. And this is what you're saying with the secret. Now, I know some people might be listening in and they say, well, that sounds a bit woo-woo, but there's more and more science backing this up, you know, about putting the energy out there and the thought out there and manifesting. And because there's a lot of energy shifts taking place on the planet at the moment, these manifestation skills are getting quicker. So things are happening quicker, and that seems to be escalating. And a lot of people are reporting back in this, Lynn. So you're not the only one that's coming back and saying the same thing and agreeing with what you're saying.
Well, I think that the proof is in the pudding. Our organisation has grown. We've got, in the last 3 months, we've taken on 100 staff and we're trying to recruit for another 100. I think that we've just brought in multi-million pound contracts. We're reinvesting that into technology, into our staff, into marketing the business so that we can do more good. We're inviting other businesses in a cooperative way to come to us. We've got projects that are educational, care, environmental. We've just taken on Gorgie City Farm in Edinburgh, which is, we're using it as a therapeutic site for some of our service users. And it has absolutely grown arms and legs. And I suppose that when you, even if you don't believe in the law of attraction or manifestation, that putting that intent behind something and driving it forward, for me, success isn't an end game. It's about, success is today. Like, I don't want to wait until I'm 70 to look back in my life and say, oh, this is great, look what I've done. It's enjoying the moment, it's driving it forward, it's knowing that what I do helps people, and that we help our staff and that we try to improve the conditions. Like, essentially, as big and cheesy as it sounds, love is going to change the world.
Totally agree.
I want love to be the biggest brand in the world so that we can help as many people as possible. And we want to invite other organisations who are like-minded to come forward and join us.
And that's where we have to go. I do want you to talk about, or yourself or Liam, whoever's the best to talk about, Gorgie Farm, because of what that was and how you managed to take it over. Can you talk about it, or just, you know...
It's Lynn for that one.
Okay, Lynn, tell us what happened, because people will say you always have to have money. You can't do anything without money, but I heard about this. Liam was telling me about it. So tell us what happened.
So you don't have to have money. There's so many people who have said to me, I'd like to start up a new project, or I'd love to go and start a business, how did you do it? And I say to them, just go do it. They will always say, but I don't have the resources, or I don't have the skills, or I don't have the knowledge, or I don't have the money. And I say, just go start it, go talk to somebody, go speak to them. So somebody in our organisation, one of our early year staff, came bouncing in one day and said, Gorgie City Farms went into liquidation, I think we should take it over. And I said, brilliant, go put a bid in for it.
Well, before you go into it, tell us what it is. Tell us what the farm is.
So Gorgie City Farm was a farm, an urban farm that sits in the centre of Edinburgh. So the people at Edinburgh basically don't get the opportunity to see sheep and cows and pigs. And it operates as a practical farm, and it educates the community around about farm to fork and how you get your food. There's also an environmental area, kind of a garden area as well. So and it went into liquidation twice. Very difficult to fund it. They were struggling, and the local community had came together because it's so loved. You would never imagine how much this farm is loved in Edinburgh and the surrounding areas. And in fact, I think for the whole of Scotland, everybody knows it. Everybody's been there, and it actually took me by surprise just how much. So I think the local community had came together and done a crowdfunding project, and they had put in £100,000 to save it, and the liquidators were trying to find a new organisation that would come in and take it over. So for me, as I said, one of your workers came forward, and I never really took it that seriously, if I'm honest. I just thought, really great idea, but we're already looking at environmental projects. We've been involved with Unifying Fields. We were looking at syntropic farming and trying to create a community project that would bring together time for time, giving back to the community, coming in and giving back, using early years, elderly, and using farming as a means to bring the community together. And we've been looking at a large area down in North Lanarkshire, which we are still in the process of taking that over as well. So when Gorgie had came up, we basically just, I said, rewrite the bid for the one that we're doing down here and submit it and see what happens. And there was quite a big cooperative of local charities in the Edinburgh area that were applying for it, so I really didn't take it that seriously. Then I got a phone call to say that we had been shortlisted and could we put in a more detailed bid, which I then wrote over Christmas. And again, I was thinking to myself, this big corporate organisations are going to get it. They're Edinburgh based. If you don't work in Edinburgh, you're unlikely to get it. And we ended up with it. And I believe that, again, it comes down to intention. It was the bid that we put in was basically that we wanted to keep the farm open to the community. We wanted to keep it open for free because we wanted people who were living in poverty to be able to access that resource and to be able to come in and get their fingers into the soil and use it as a therapeutic resource, to access food as a food bank, to be able to, a non-stigma food bank, may I add, that you don't have to come in and show a benefits book to get access to food, that they can come in and just take it. And that we would then use it as a base for our care teams, our education teams, and that we would support our most vulnerable people and use this as a resource. So, and I think as soon as we got it and we accessed it, we opened it straight up to the community. We put out a focus group. We started a survey asking them what they wanted it to be, because I think the community were in the horrors that we were going to change it or make it inaccessible for them. So it was about reassuring the community that what we wanted to do was to keep it exactly as it was, to keep that charm, to allow everybody to come and access it, to get the cafe back open, but we were going to put a sustainable business model in place. And I suppose that's the most important theme that runs through all of that business, or all the business that I do, because things were so hard to fund in the beginning, everything had to become sustainable. So every single project we put out, we sell it out to businesses, but we'll also put a version out for free. So the people who can afford to pay for it can pay for it, and the people who can't can access it. So, for example, now at Gorgie, well, it's not now because it's closed for Corona, but it would be getting used as a venue for leadership management. We're going to use it for respite services, for families. There's planning permission to build an education centre on it, where we can use it for education and residential services for really vulnerable people.
How many acres is it, Lynn?
It's only 11. So the site that we're looking at down in North Lanarkshire is 700 acres.
Wow.
And this site that we're looking at up in, well, the site that we've got in Gorgie is only 11 acres. So what we're doing there is that, as I said before, we've joined up with Unifying Fields and Permaculture Scotland to create environmental projects that are sustainable to the community and that are going to improve mental health, mental wellbeing, sustainability, food sovereignty.
How do you find, Lynn? Sorry, just jump in there while I remember this. How do you find the people's approach to what you're doing? Are people coming in and saying to you, this is what I want to do, I want to get away from the computer, from the TV, and get away from that corporate model, and I want to come in and just get involved? Because I can see I can see people getting more involved in the growing aspect, syntropic farming and the animals and stuff like that. You know, I think that's the way everything's going to go. So are you seeing people, are people coming up to you and go, I want to get involved in this, I want to do this?
I think it's a mixture. I think coming from somebody who's never put their fingers in the soil and wasn't green-fingered, I was actually surprised at how many people did come forward, and that's what they wanted. When I first went to Gorgie Farm, I thought it was all about the animals. And I thought, right, we could even get rid of the gardener and get more different animals in and make it a bit more interesting for our visitors. But I very quickly discovered that the environmental part of what we do is so, so, so important that even for the people who don't know, we want to educate them on it. And it's probably one of the most important things that... So if you think about, when I say that we're inviting other organisations to come together, we've invited a lot of different environmental charities, projects, community groups to come together, that we can now access funding, or funding that we make through business, that we will fund the projects, and that they go out and deliver them, like Green Playground, for example, where we're going out and bringing the kids to Gorgie, or we're going out into the schools to educate them. So I think the important thing is that if people aren't coming, is that we're seeing or taking every opportunity in terms of like social media to be showing the benefits of like the importance of trees, for example, to the earth, and that we've called our garden in Gorgie our climate change. Garden, and that we've taken almost like an activist approach. We've got banners in it that give you all the information on how trees heal the earth, and it's a really, really nice approach. And I think it's eye opening. I mean, it was real when I was educated on it. I couldn't believe the impact, or how easy it is to actually heal the earth in terms of the environmental projects that we could be running that would be beneficial to the community, that would be beneficial to businesses, and to bring in all the things that I've spoke about, because I know there's so much that we do, but it's almost bringing it all together to create this big cycle that they all link in with each other, and that the education, the cooperative business, the time for time and the environmental stuff, it all comes together.
I just want to bring Liam in here, because Liam, before we went live, we were talking about the funding. And one of the things that you said is that there are grants available from the government to do these things, but they're probably buried somewhere deep. You have to really know what you're looking for and what you're doing. But can you give us a kind of a heads up on your process when you're looking for grants? How do you approach it?
Yeah, I'll just quickly jump back first. I just want to agree with Lynn there. The intent at the moment is everything. So my whole journey, my awakening started 12 years ago when somebody handed me the book, The Secret, at my deepest, baddest depths. You know, and I don't read, I'm very dyslexic, okay with numbers, but so it took me a long time to read the book. It's probably like a 2-hour read or something. I remember reading, I thought, what a load of rubbish. That easy, I would have been doing it. But since then, I started reading more and more books. Something happened that triggered the response and all the rest of it. So for me, the whole learning about manifestation was a massive part of my early journey. And I totally, utterly agree with Lynn that the purity of the intention, especially now, especially the changes over the last 6 months, 12 months, all the frequency vibrational changes, that intention can be falsified. It's either pure or it's not. So as from the heart, so to speak. And the rate of our manifesting things now. So, you know, it doesn't surprise me what Lynn's doing there. I know the intention's pure from the whole organisation. So, and that's one of the things I think we need to keep that in mind, is when we're doing the projects and everyone's got an idea, it's the intention behind it and the outcome, the expected outcome, which then taps into when you're trying to find resources and trying to tap into grants or other funding. Lynn's probably better than this, but just some of the things that I would say, try to raise finances. There's always grants, there's always different things available. Biggest problem I see is people don't try. It's as simple as that. You know, the amount of people say, oh, I can't do this until I get funded. We hear it at all the teaching. And I understand that, because that's where we have been. Like Lynn, we've got an idea, a project, a new business startup. Whether there's money there or not, start the ball rolling. We just start planning, start talking to people, start visualising it. You know, use all these tools, which is you're actually starting to create it and probably the non-physical to bring it into the physical. So that's one of the things I would say is definitely try. If you don't try, you certainly don't get. Another thing is if you don't ask, you don't get as well. The amount of times, and Lynn's been a great example of this, you know, around companies and businesses and other organisations and asking, you know, if you get any surplus product there or surplus food or whatever it might be. And it's amazing what comes in. So, yeah, I think there's probably thousands of different types of grants and things available. And, yeah, it's difficult. It's a nuisance applying for these things. But I say if you don't try, you don't get. But along with the intention, I think it makes it easier. You know, like Celine managing to get Gornji Farm and this other place, the amount of people come together, the funding came together in so many different ways, from the people, from crowdfunding. So there's crowdfunding as well. But, you know, everybody could do something to raise some funding themselves, like you're doing, Alan, the pound a month thing. Sorry, Lynn, you want to say something?
I was going to say that probably one of the biggest lessons for me is that when we took on Gornji, as far as I'm concerned, Gornji Farm doesn't belong to Love. Gornji Farm belongs to the community. They crowdfunded for it. They saved it. They tell us what they want it to be. And we're lucky enough to be able to use it as a resource for the community. But when it came to everything came together, all the funding came in, an example of during Corona, we turned it into a food bank while it's closed.
Which is brilliant.
We turned it into a food bank. So, but one of my worries was, I thought to myself, right, what if we don't get people who come forward who need food? Or what if we get too many people and we don't get food? And I thought, oh, Lynn, for God's sake, just go and do it. And that is my thing to everybody, just go do it. So we went out, we spoke to Fair Share, asked them to consider us a food bank. They donated some food. I think we started off with three families that needed food, and lo and behold, we had enough food for three families, and it just worked. It just grows. You just create it. Go out and speak to people. Go out and have meetings with people who do things similar to you. Ask their advice, and it'll happen. Things, opportunities will come. I see every single thing that happens to me in my day as an opportunity. If somebody wants to come and speak to me, I'm always open to it. I'm always. If somebody messages me on LinkedIn and stuff like that, I'm always open to everything that comes my way, because that is how things grow, and that's how it happens, and that's how it becomes.
Can I ask you, Lynn, the whole idea, I loved the idea of doing that, but over here in Ireland, there was a lady that, when myself and Steve were running OIM Radio, we were big supporters of the Feed the Homeless, and she actually had a barn or building beside our property, and she had fridges and freezers in there, properly set up with food, and the council came along and closed her down. And, you know, for people who want to do this, now I know that Ireland's probably different on the law side. They're similar, but not quite. This is the problem that we have. The authorities don't like competition, especially when it shows them up as being incompetent. And this lady had to close down our food bank. And that's the only thing I see. I think there are people who want to do these things, but again, the authorities come in. So did you have any issues with authorities coming in and saying you can't do that?
I think the biggest thing for me is to go and join forces with your haters or with the people who are opposing you, or to go and have a conversation with them and to say, how can we work around this? How can we work together? There have been circumstances where, not for that, certainly not with the food bank, it was always welcomed. But there are, I know there have been other places that have been shut down, I've heard it before. And I suppose for me is either calling it out. I think that when you're doing something that's really, really good, nobody can rubbish that. Nobody can take that away. And it's to call that out, to either go public about it or to go to the people themselves and build relationships with them. Because that's always the best way, and then you get the best outcome. I know that's not always easy, but speaking to the right person, finding a way to sit down with the people who have opposed it, to show the intention behind it, and then that gets them on board. You build a relationship between each other, and generally speaking, I've always been able to then move forward with whatever project that I've needed or wanted to do.
Very good. Okay, because that's important. Liam?
Yeah. Also, you know, the Love Group has grown, has had so much publicity over the last while that it's now become a bit of a powerhouse that needs to be listened to. You know, they've got so much coverage on social media. It was plastered all the news here recently with the Gorgie Farm opening, because that was on to go for 40 years. So it was a big thing. So that it's a voice that is doing a lot of good. And as Lynn said there, you'll go and speak to the problem thing. And Lynn's very, very good at that, to sort of talk people around. So if you're trying to do something that's almost, to them, it feels like behind their back, I'm sure Lynn will agree with this. Even if they want to take the credit for it, what the hell, as long as the project's getting done, you know?
When we took on Gorgie Farm, I was really surprised, first of all, by the profile, and then by what I can only describe as haters, people that were messaging us and trolling us. And a lot of people didn't like the decisions we made. And what I done was I put a survey out to the community and said, what do you want us to do? And then every time a hater came to me or a troll or somebody who disagreed, I had a community forum where I invited people to come in and speak to us. And every time somebody opposed it, I mean, I think, I suppose, I speak strongly that I feel that I make decisions based on the greater good, on what the community wants or what my staff want. Or there are times when I need to make decisions and stick to it and say, no, that's not happening. But generally speaking, I'll go with the consensus. So when it comes to somebody coming and challenging us, I can quite openly say, well, do you know, I put it out to the community and this is what they wanted. If it had went the other way, we might have went the other way. But right now we've made a decision based on that fact. And it almost gives you that power stance, because you're doing exactly what the people want. You're doing exactly what the community wants. You're doing, and that includes your local authorities, your local governments, involving them in that process, making sure that everybody gets out of it what they want. And then it means that your projects are more successful and you get better outcomes for the people that are involved in it as well.
I totally agree. Look, they're the principles that you would use in a corporate company if you're doing project management. When you do it properly and you get the buy-in from the departments, then you don't get kickback from them. So what you're doing with the community is spot on. You're getting the buy-in for the community, so they're not going to turn around and say no to it, which is the best way to do it, because that means they feel part of it and they're involved in it, you know, and they can get involved in it. Now, how many people, you said what that was, 100 people that you've hired recently?
So since in the last 2 months we've hired 120 people.
Oh my god.
And we've got a recruitment out for another 100, and that's for care workers. I think in Scotland, I don't know what it's like in Ireland, but certainly in Scotland, the care sector is goosed. The staff are undervalued, they're underpaid, there's no training budgets. The contracts that come out for the local authority are on the breadline. There's no margins in it, and it's really, really difficult to improve the conditions for care. So, but obviously with coronavirus, they're trying to get people out of hospitals, more home care. Our services have actually went through the roof. And it was increasing, and we had a massive recruitment on before COVID-19. But
and what about the minimum wage? Do you buy into that, or what do you do about that?
Sorry, I missed that question. How
does it work regarding, you know, myself and Liam, we're talking about the cooperative business and the whole minimal wage thing. Have you got around that? Do you treat that differently?
Yep. So we made our entry level the living wage. The living wage in Scotland is £9.30. And I know that the government has just announced that the living wage will be paid to all care workers. We've been paying that since last year. But what we've done is we've increased our salary to your entry level £9.30 an hour up to £12 an hour, which is one of the highest paid private providers, certainly in Scotland. And that's taking our profits away and putting it back to the staff to ensure that we can retain them and that we value them. We're also an SQA centre, as I mentioned earlier, so we're able to put all the training in place for them as well. So I suppose, like I said previously, the cycle of learning and development, education, cooperative business, it affects every part of the business positively. And we've tried to do the same in care and basically lobbying Scottish Government as well to try and make changes to the local authority contracts in care as well, and overall try and improve the care standards in Scotland.
So let me just recap on that. So the normal hourly rate for a carer is around £9, but you're paying £12.
Yes. So wow. I think probably the average payment for a care worker is about £8 an hour. And only this week they've announced it to go up to £9.30. Our entry level is £9.30, but they then move up to £12 an hour within a year.
That's brilliant. That's fantastic. Well, listen, we have questions that have come in. But before we go to the questions, Liam, I just want you to touch base very quickly, in a few minutes anyway. Just tell us about your spiritual side and the psychic side, because I do want to cover that. So tell us a bit about that before we go over to the questions.
Yeah, well, for me, that was I've always been interested in that. I got into it a number of years ago, and it was a personal development thing for me. Yusui Reiki through to master level, angelic Reiki, then quantum entanglement. Now, these are all just, I think, labels for energy healing. And again, we're going to go back to the word intent. It's your intention to help someone or a business, or is it? It doesn't need to be just a person you're healing. But what I've learned over the years, I say, well over 1,000 people through hands, with all sorts of things, particularly deep emotional, mental, emotional things. And you learn so much from every single person that comes along, and you can do so much to help them. And what you'd end up building up a huge knowledge, and your intuition was through the roof, working that muscle so much. You'd sit with these people for a few hours at a time, you know, with four nights a week type of thing, did it for many years. And then I started to take that into business. And it became one of the most valuable things, the most powerful things. I could go and sit in a boardroom before anybody even spoke. I could feel everybody's ego. I could understand what was going to happen. I could just already kind of feel the outcome. So you knew how to, I don't like using the word manipulate, but you came out with the outcome you were needing. And it was always for the benefit of others. And I found that very, very valuable. One of the reasons I got into healing was one of my sons had leukemia a number of years ago. And luckily he made it through, but you felt quite helpless. What could I do to help these? I was watching all these kids in the hospital and families, all these kids didn't make it as well. And we thought, I want to do something to help. So that was another trigger as well for getting more involved in healing, making it policy in businesses that you get paid when you're off and things like that, so you can support your family and things. So it's been a huge, really interesting. It's almost like it was like a kind of hobby to me. I've seen amazing things that I would never have believed unless I experienced them myself with people. But it's about intention, your intention to help someone. And that's changing, that healing's changing drastically over this last 12 months in particular. The frequencies that are coming now, the vibration is here. People that maybe I came for 2 or 3, 4 sessions for something very deep is now getting sorted out in one session. Although you've built a lot of knowledge up, you know, you can fix someone's problem in, you know, an hour, but it took you 30 years to figure out your own life experience and what to say to them, you know. So I think it's been a really powerful thing. I think it needs to be the holistic part needs to be a bigger part of businesses. And I think people are seeing that now. You know, a couple of years ago in business, I would go to all sorts of business conferences and things like that. And, you know, people didn't talk about this stuff. And literally just a few weeks ago, or maybe a month ago now, I was invited along with my bank manager to go to one of these gatherings of, you know, maybe 20 people or something. And I was a kind of odd one out there, but I just spoke up about this. And I spoke about how I incorporated the intuitive stuff in business. And, you know, I didn't hide anything that I was doing personally. And the interest that was in that room was unbelievable. Every single one of them, because I was coming up with all these solutions and different problem-solving things. And I know I was channeling. I'd love to take credit for it, but I was channeling 99% of it, you know. But they were really simple, clever solutions, different way of thinking. And I think if we can develop that at any organisation, any person, you know, that'll just really, really help. I know Lynn does a lot with our group and does various different things. So I think the world's ready for that. People are more open to it now. It's becoming more the norm. So, yeah, I would love to see more of that in any organisation.
I think we have to start encompassing that in the in our jobs and in the corporate structure. Lynn, did you want to come in there?
Just to say that for me, more recently, it's been about the vibration and about, again, the intention and the vibration that we create within our organisation and what that then puts out and brings back to us, just like I was saying previously. that if businesses approach things more holistically, then and you help people at the same time, it's just better for business.
Yeah, of course.
Even if you're only looking at it from a business perspective, it's good for business.
Well, look, I know it's a cliche, but happy staff are productive staff. I mean, it's a cliche, but it's true. If you're going into work, you know, how many times have we been in jobs and it's Sunday evening and we're all dreading it? We're going, oh, I've got to bloody work tomorrow, Monday morning. What if you turn that around and you're looking forward to going into work and getting your work done?
By the way, I can't stop my staff from working. Like, they send out emails at 11 o'clock and I'm like saying, right, work-life balance, try to get you to work less. And they are just, the only way to describe them is they're buzzing. They all know that they help people. The people who are answering the phones, who are doing the admin, they know that they are all connected to the greater good. They know that they've helped facilitate the care teams, the education teams, and everybody knows that they're doing something great, and it's just, it's electric.
That's it, and it's a buzz, and you feed off each other. Okay, I want to go off to the questions, and we have, the first question is from Terry from THI Ireland, and Terry wants to know about the syntropic farming, and he wants to know, obviously, Liam had mentioned that they're doing it over here in Ireland, and he just wanted to know who's doing it and where are they doing it. So without going into too much personal detail, because we can pass that information on privately to Terry, but tell us about the syntropic farming and what's going on there, and if you know about the Irish side, tell us about that as well, Liam or Lynn, whoever wants to take that.
Yeah, well, I can give a quick update on it, something Lynn maybe doesn't know about. Lynn's been involved with it directly with Unifying Fields. They're doing things at Gorgie Farm and this other place that they're going to be taking over. So there's been a lot of things happening. I actually live in the countryside and I have some land, just the same as we're working some of these energy devices in my workshop at home. So we're setting a place aside, and what that's going to be is a little kind of little centre of excellence, so to speak. It's going to show the process. It's going to be videoed, documented, how to do this type of farming. I don't know much about the ins and outs of it. I've met a lot of the people that are involved. It's absolutely amazing, the results they're getting. It's already happening in various places around the world. They're getting like 10 times the yield, no chemicals, healthy food, grown food at times of the year that just wouldn't normally grow. And that's working with nature, working with the trees and various different things. So I think it's a way to go. It can be done in miniature scales. That's another project that's getting underway at the moment. Where it's just like little boxes, you know, it's like maybe a couple of metres by a couple of metres, or get into to schools, to folks' gardens and all these different things. So it can be done in a very micro scale, and a huge scale as well, with getting farmers involved. So I know there's a lot going on in the background. There's some amazing experts around, they're dotted various places around the world, getting involved in this. I met one of them fairly recently. I was just blown away with this, the knowledge. Of course, travel arrangements a bit tricky at the moment. So yeah, we're going to set that trial up, and that will actually be live online at any time for people to actually watch. So we're setting up at the, what, about 7 acres or something available. So we're just going to set up a little plot and show the whole process, video it all, but make it a little documentary so people can see the training videos, see the growth, see the outcome, see how to do this. And that can be scaled up or scaled down, and it'll be free for everyone to copy. That's as much as I know about it, but Lynn's been more involved in other ways, I think. Is that right, Lynn?
So we've been involved with Syntropic Farming and Permaculture Scotland, which are both very similar in the way that they do things. I think the big thing for us is that we have the scope for education, and that because we hold the contracts at local authority level and schools and stuff, that we're going to take the Syntropic Farming out to educate the community, the children, the parents. But then also we're linking with universities to take that out to farmers and horticulture courses and stuff like that. We're getting a lot of volunteers coming forward. In terms of Unifying Fields globally, and obviously I'm no expert, it would be Robert that would speak on this, or Uzi. I know there was a training course recently in Ireland, and I think there's going to be another one that we can send that information on and link everybody into it. But essentially, Unifying Fields, the concept of it, and like, I think people have farmed the way they've farmed for generation after generation, and when you start to see the concept and the yield of what this can do, it's absolutely mind-blowing. And then when you take it into the community and give it back to the community it's just for in terms of like food banks, and it's just amazing.
Okay, well, what we'll do is for Terry, privately, Liam, if you can give us the details, I'll pass that information on to Terry. Okay, we have a few questions that are here we'll get through. If you do have a question on the chat room, make sure you put a cue or question at the start so I can see it, please. Thank you very much. Right, the first question is from Dougie, and he says, what mechanism did THI Scotland use to give money to the Love Group, i.e. did THI Scotland members donate to a THI Scotland bank account?
So we don't do this currently in that fashion because basically all these organisations existed before THI came along. So they work in their own way. Lynn works between our charity, as she said a little while ago. Our businesses fund the charities. But we work between own businesses here. We share resources. You know, if there was any money to be transferred, it would be transferred direct to a bank account. You know, there's nothing separate set up for THI yet. It's always been done directly between businesses or individuals. We've worked really, really closely, shared resources. You know, we've got various staff that help one another. Lynn helps with things with her staff for here, with her own businesses. And we do the same going back and forth rather than just moving money about and things like that. So there's other ways of doing it. We don't actually have a bank account. I know that's a question that comes up a lot, Alan, but for a lot of the THI groups, how to do that. And that's not been clearly refined yet because there's no point in starting to gather up bank charges and things like that until it's needed. I would do things just peer-to-peer, one-to-one, you know, or if you've got your PayPal thing set up or some other mechanism, you know, for the pound a week, the pound a month or dollar a week, whatever it is.
Brilliant.
So that's how we do that.
Okay, no problem. Lynn, do you want to comment on that?
I suppose for me it's about I'm not waiting on funding coming. I'm out making my own funding because, again, set the intention, go out and do it. I know it just, I'm making it sound as if it's easy and people think that it's impossible, but genuinely, the funding is there. If everybody sits back and waits on funding being released, how do you know it's not being released? How do you know that it's not... that there's more availability than you think? Just try and access. If you can't access funding because of the way it is in Ireland due for charitable purposes, then put out business activities, put out services, and the funding will come.
Excellent. Okay. There's another question here from Shane, and I'm not too sure about this. What's behind this question, Shane? I'm not too sure, but I'll ask it anyway. And Shane wants to know, did either of your guests ever create jobs and sign paychecks?
Create jobs.
Yeah, did either of your guests ever create jobs and sign paychecks? It's a bit of a strange question. I'm sure you've hired people
Lynn's hired hundreds. I've hired hundreds in the different businesses. So, and every one of them, maybe not a paycheck, it gets paid direct into their account. They all get paid. It's huge amounts of... And the businesses, the company that I set up for doing restructuring of businesses has saved literally thousands of jobs. They're all getting paychecks. And there's a lot of hiring done there as well. So hopefully that answers his question. But if there's anything more to it, just let us know.
Yeah, okay. Lynn, do you want to comment on that?
Just, I suppose, the same. We've hired hundreds of people. We've got a payroll that would give you a fright, and it's all good.
I'm sure it will, 120 people, yeah. Okay.
How many people you got, Lynn, just in total? You've not mentioned that tonight. How many people you got just now?
So I think we've got 240, and we're still rising rapidly. We can't fulfil our contracts.
Wow. 240 staff, that's fantastic. Right, okay, Steve. Steve, and he's finished the ironing now. He's tuning in. He's hung up his iron. Steve wants to know, question for Lynn, how do you vet your staff? Do you interview them and get a vibe from them, or do you look at their CV?
So this is quite a hard one for me. Actually, that's a good question because... I suppose, especially when you're working in care and education, you have to go through the safer recruitment process. We have to go through like PVG, reference checks. We've got to interview them. There's a whole process that we have to follow by law, which we do. But in the beginning, I hired everybody. And now I don't know, I walk past people in the corridor and I don't know who they are. So that actually gave me a bit of an anxiety where I thought, right, we have to have a process in place on how we bring through the right people and how we make sure that our recruitment reflects who we are. Our brand is love. Love is the highest vibration. And I have to say that on a spiritual note of what we were talking about earlier, the right people come as well. Our organisation is full of, which we fondly call ourselves, misfits, people with the greatest intentions. But we have set up a recruitment process. Those that are questions are out of the ordinary. You don't get a normal interview when you come to Love. And I have to say that, generally speaking, our staff are absolutely amazing, as cheesy as it sounds.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough, yes. I mean, you have your methods. As long as the methods that you use work and you're getting the right staff, who says you have to follow some criteria or some process?
And even now, during Corona, we're using Zoom for interview purposes. We're still recruiting while we're on, and it's still working. We're still able to get the right staff through.
Excellent. And obviously, Liam, you have your methods as well, you were saying earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would definitely use more intuition now. I very seldom look at a CV. But yeah, they've got to be able to do the process or the work in a particular machinery or whatever that role might be. But for me, the minute they walk in the door and I shake their hand, I know. So it's just an instant knowing. But that took a lot of years to get to that stage. So I instantly know it's a yes or a no. And it's really, really good. That's why I was saying working on your intuition, working on that muscle, building all that up, having more and more of that in any aspect of your life is so, so valuable. Every decision I make is made on a feeling and emotion, you know, not what the numbers say or the forecast say or the CV says, you know.
Yeah, no, it's important. Well, they do say the first 25 seconds of your first meeting is the first impression, is you get a feeling for the person. So, you know, that's important. Right, okay, Peter wants to know, just to change the subject, but on a bigger scale, he says, Liam, how do we change Bill Gates' bad intentions?
That's a good question. I don't think we need to worry about it. My intuition tells me we don't need to worry about it. And, I think we should just put the focus elsewhere. They're scrabbling away there at crazy ideas. I just think it's never going to happen. It doesn't stop putting fear into people. So I tend not to give it any energy. I put my energy and my focus on better things happening rather than looking at that at all. That's what I do with everything, you know. I'll have a quick look, just acknowledge it, and then laugh at it, think how crazy, and move on. I think there's plenty of things in the background going to happen, so none of these stupid things happen.
I think so. Lynn, do you want to comment on that?
I suppose it's the same for me, and I don't walk about with rose-tinted glasses on, but I don't put my energy into negative. I focus on the good and just dismiss the rest.
Exactly. Don't give it energy. That's what I'd say. Just don't give it energy. Okay. Yvonne from THI South Africa just put on the chat room there that she has a permaculture farm, but she hasn't heard of a centropic farm. I'm not sure what the difference is. I definitely don't have green fingers, so I couldn't tell you. I don't know whether you, yourself, Lynn or Liam, know the difference between a permaculture and a centropic.
So, I'm not going to kid on I'm an expert here and pretend that I know. I know that both of them, when I had both of them talking at the same time, and at the end of the talk I said, so basically you're doing the same thing. It's a very, very similar model. Certainly one that I couldn't differentiate between, but I'm not an expert on it. Two of them are absolutely amazing. I think centropically it was more international, whereas for us it was on our kind of climate and stuff like that. And I know that the permaculture stuff have done a lot here, whereas in for centropic farming it's been more on the other side of the globe. But outside of that, I can get that information sent over to you though.
Okay, no problem.
I think that's a good idea. Of course, I'm not the one. We don't have a clue.
But best be honest anyway.
We don't have a clue. We're just trying to make it happen. That's all. So we have absolutely, we can put the right people in touch with Yvonne and get any information she wants.
Brilliant.
See,
stuff.
When it comes to environmental projects, I see myself as a facilitator. I absolutely love it. I know it has to be there. I know it's going to heal the world, and I'm going to help and do it as much as possible. But I just don't know the detail behind it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's that's fair enough. That's no problem. Okay, Kim on the chat room wants to know what this is good for both of you. What are you what are you wanting to achieve on a global scale? So, Liam, over to you. What are you wanting to achieve on a global scale?
Well, for me, I want to see Lynn successful in our model, but I think I'd love to see the cooperative model. You know, I'm really passionate about that and bringing in that new way, because that's going to change so much. It affects so much. You know, we spend so much time, much more time at work. If we can be happy at work, de-stressed at work, working less for more, our families are going to get affected, our local communities are going to get affected. It just is a complete rollout, and it goes against all the control systems that's out there. As a model, it's going to take some time to get out. I mean, eventually, once the snowball's going down the hill, so to speak, we'll make huge progress in a short space of time. That's going to affect everyone everywhere, because the whole thing's about giving back, changing lives, everything for the better, getting rid of greed, getting rid of all the other horrible things that goes on with the child labour and just crazy things that we're doing to the environment as well. So I think that's probably going to be the biggest focus. And with that aside, it's focusing on supporting some of the other projects as well, in place of what Lynn's doing. The model that Lynn's creating can be rolled out everywhere, I think.
I think so. I think it's a scalable model. Lynn, what's your take on that?
On a global level, I would like to see that we spread love around the world. And as cheesy as that sounds, I think that we want to raise consciousness amongst the population. We want people to understand their own connection to the universe, that and that by doing that, using the business model of love, that we're able to promote just a better way of living, a better way of working, a better way of existing, basically, and to raise human potential through technology, through love, I suppose, and spreading love across the globe.
Yeah, no, that's the important thing. With the energy changes that are taking place, the more people, again, we said it earlier on the show, the intent that you put into it, and if you're doing it for the right reasons, it's definitely going to grow. And I feel that's the way we're going. The old model, the old corporate greed model is falling apart, and it's just not working anymore. And obviously, with everything going on, we can't go back to the way it was. You know, people saying, oh, when are we going to go back to the way it was before the virus, after this lockdown is over? But why do we need to go back to the way it was? Because the way it was wasn't working. So we have to go back a different way. And maybe the time that we've been in the lockdown have given a lot of people time to think about what's going on and what they want to do with their lives, especially with all the information that's gone around the internet. And a lot of people have been red-pilled, if you want to call it that, and are waking up to what's going on. And there seems to be a mass awakening that's going on. And people are saying, no more, we're not having any more. And it's great to see that. But what I want to do is, Liam, just go over to you. I want to find out, what's your plans for you as a businessman and what you're doing? And I'm going to ask the same question to Lynn. What's your immediate plans for the next year or two? What are you planning to do? How are you going to scale up? Because you're obviously having great success. Forget about the virus for a minute, because the lockdown is going to finish in the next week or two. Anyway, we have to go back to the way, you know, go back to work, so to speak. So what's your move now with the whole cooperative model? What are you going to plan to do with the next couple of years with that?
Yeah, well, so I'm going to look to develop our own key parts of this cooperative model, all these different bits. We've been trialing new things all the time, want to keep developing that, share that with the THI groups, all our findings there, and learn from everything else that's going on. But the businesses I see looking at technology, we're already, as you know, we're working in new energy technology, different devices, healing technology. I can't go into too much of it, but these are game changers. These are things that, you know, it's going to change the world. So if we don't deploy the new technology in a new way, as you said, Alan, we'll be back to where we were. So we have to use a cooperative model. We have to ethically deploy this technology. And what we're looking to do here is hopefully build, take one or two of these technologies, build a factory here in Scotland and create a blueprint for that particular technology, whether it's healing, whether it's energy, whatever it might be, or probably both. And then we'll build on that blueprint. We'll get it really refined, get the quality right, and then share that with each and every country so as they can build their own factories, get their own supply chain going. They can come to Scotland for training or create their own training centres. So the scale that would grow at would be phenomenal because it's a disruptive technology. It's changing what's out there. So with people coming from other jobs coming into that industry, but coming into that industry in a way where they're owning part of the company, it's helping businesses, it's saving people 90% of their fuel costs. It's all sorts of things that's going to come out of it. So it's benefit to people, it's benefit to the environment, but deploy it in a way where, you know, it's good ethical business, because new technology is going to come, I believe, over the next 10, 20 years at a phenomenal rate, and we've got to bring it out properly. It's going to wipe the floor with all the old industries. So if we get the plan right, and you know, that's what I'm planning to be involved in, we're already working on it, we're already planning going towards that and generating funding in a number of different ways, with or without any trust funds going out to try and get that. Because that'd be a great way, a good revenue stream, so it's sustainable for each and every country. You know, there's about 1.2 billion people out there don't have electricity. You know, if you imagine if you could get them some power and clean water and using that power for clean water, you know, it's a game changer. So that's what we're planning on. That's the focus for ourselves.
Brilliant stuff. And I will say something that, you know, for people that, you know, are kind of had kind of issues with the fact that, oh, we don't know whether that's going to work, the corporate model. Lean's actually doing it. It's working. It's happening. And people are happy with it. So there you go. There's the proof. Rather than the naysayers turning around and saying, well, that's not going to work, he's doing it. And we know it's working and he's successful with it. So that's the one thing we will say to people who are a bit hesitant from using that kind of business model. It is working successfully. Lynn, what's your take over the next 2 years? What's your plans for the Love Group?
So I suppose it's the scalability of the Love brand and putting that out there on a global level. Mm-hmm. I've got three priorities right now, and one of them is to improve the care services, the care sector, to make sure that it impacts on the people who receive the care at the end. We're all going to be, we're all going to use care, we're all going to need care in some way, shape or form, and it should be the best that's delivered in the world, and we are going to impact in that. So, we're going to also improve the profitability of the services and the products that we put out, because ultimately that then allows us to improve the services, it allows us to improve the conditions for our staff, it allows us to put out services where people can't access it at all. And then in line kind of with what Liam was saying, we want to harness Love through technology. So we want to raise human potential and we want to find ways to improve care. There's a lot of people who are receiving care and they're maybe receiving 15 minutes when they should be receiving an hour, or people who are maybe getting, who don't really need care but they just need their medication and stuff like that. So we're looking into new ways to improve people's lives basically through technology and invest in our profits there.
The one thing I'm kind of very focused on as well regarding the employment of people, and we've said it in the presentations that we've been doing, Liam, is that you put the CV to one side and you look at the person, because you know you can train anybody to do anything, but you can't give them empathy. You can't make them a caring person.
No.
They when they grow up, their parents give them that, you know, that skill, you know, and give them that ability. And the one thing that you notice with corporate companies, and it used to drive me nuts, is that there's some great people out there, but because they don't have a certain piece of paper, apparently you can't do the job because you don't have this piece of paper. And I have proved in my career where I've had so-called IT consultants coming in with all the pieces of paper, and I'd say, okay, we have two network systems here and we need to speak to them, get them speaking to each other, and I've done this. And they go, oh no, you can't do that. In the book it says you can't do it. And I go, well, I've just done it. This is we have to get away from this isometric testing, which is what they do. And I don't know if anybody's ever done it, especially on a management level, where you go into a room and they give you a piece of paper and there's loads of words. There's three words, there's three columns, and there's words in all these columns. And they'll say, are you this or more of this or are you this? It's so impersonal. It just really drives me nuts. And go ahead, Lynn.
Sorry, I was going to say I had to do that to get in the fire service, and then again when I was going through my management qualifications for fire service as well, that we had to do psychometric testing. And one particular incident where some firefighters have been promoted into management through their psychometric testing, and the guys who were practical and who had failed it, the guys who had passed it were asking the advice of the guys who had failed it and stuff like that. It's just ridiculous sometimes. I know that it can work in certain aspects, but I think you have to go in your gut and you have to go in personality. More recently, we've done a recruitment drive for people who have been unemployed or who've lost their jobs to Corona. And what we've said is you might not have experience in care, you might never have considered it, but come and use this situation to put food on your own table to earn a living for a short time and go back to your own job when it opens back up again. And we kind of came under fire for that. People were saying that we were hiring people who weren't suitable for the job and had no interest in, and I completely disagreed with it. I just thought that we had this opportunity to get a skill set for people that we would never have seen previous to this. And a lot of the people who have came, the compassion that they show for the people that they're caring for, and people who have decided to stay long term and they're not going to go back to their original jobs, it just shows you that what's put on paper or a CV just in some cases just doesn't matter.
Yeah, no, totally, exactly. And, you know, I have come across people, you know, you look at the CV and the qualifications are brilliant, but that person could be, I don't know, taking drugs on the weekend or doing whatever. Now, if that's their choice, that's fine. But if they come into work and what they're doing socially is affecting the work, then that becomes a concern of mine, and that has to be dealt with. And I have sacked, fired and hired people. And there's one guy in particular was smoking marijuana before he came into the job. You know, in the car park, he was an IT consultant. And I gave him chance after chance, and I just said, right, okay, I'm going to have to let you go. You know, some people will shoot themselves in the foot because, again, it goes back to myself and Liam have talked about the personal responsibility, going from the child mind to the adult mind and taking that responsibility. And, Liam, I think you've come across situations where something that you don't want to do, but there are certain people who just are not, you know, fit to do the job or not able to do the job. Do you want to kind of...
Well, you've just got to, unfortunately, the world we live in, you still have to be ruthless sometimes, because it's amazing how one person or a few people can disrupt a whole business, a whole organisation. I've seen it more, not so much in my own, we have problems from time to time, but when I was going into restructure businesses and you're going into these companies and you're trying to find the problem, they're about to fail, they're about to get into administration, you know, and there's maybe hundreds of jobs they need saved. So you've got to look at and say, well, what is wrong here, you know, and some of the idiots you come across, you think, how did you get into that position? You know, a lot of the time, it's usually always 90% of the time, it's upper management. It's not the people doing the work. It's not the rest of the organisation. Yeah, you get the odd one. But it's the people that are trying to manage and usually being greedy and, you know, they're not really doing their jobs properly, or the owners sometimes as well. And that's where you've got to be ruthless and sometimes wipe out that whole management team and bring our people up or bring other people in. You have to do it, otherwise, you know, people might miscall you for being ruthless, but you've maybe just saved a couple of hundred jobs by firing 10, sorry, call them idiots, but sometimes that's what they are, you know, and the crazy things they're doing. So, like I said, well, you've got to do these things from time to time.
And Lynn, how do you get on with your recruitment? Have you come across any issues that you've had to deal with?
Absolutely. So although our brand is love, there are times when I've found ourselves in a situation where we've got like a small group of really toxic staff and we've just had to show them the door. Equally so, I've had circumstances where I've had situations in work where it might have amounted to theft or gross misconduct. And when I've delved into the situation, my gut has told me, this person needs help, this person needs support, and we've went way above and beyond to try and help that person, to try and support them. And I have to say that in those circumstances, it's been the best decision. People have said, you're a mug, don't give them a second chance, and sometimes it becomes the best decision you've ever made. But absolutely, and I suppose that was one of the hardest lessons for me, because I used to hang on to people. I used to think people were loyal to me, so I had to be loyal to them. And there just comes a time when, like, if you're trying to create a culture with people, that everybody has to share those values, and if it doesn't, it starts to disrupt the whole organisation. So,
You're always going to get your bad apples, and you have to remove that energy because it's not conducive to the business and how you want to run it. And I totally get that. And unfortunately, it's just the way it is in society. There will be people who will try and take advantage of a situation, and you kind of have to close that down. Just before we've just a few minutes left, I just want to ask both of you, Liam, how are you getting on with the way the virus is working at the moment and staff and your businesses? How are you getting on with that?
Well, that's been quite a challenge, to be fair, and it's difficult because it changes day to day. The main companies here are manufacturing engineering companies. We supply the medical industry. We supply the Ministry of Defence as well in some cases. So we're entitled to stay open, but the fear in the staff. So what we did with the staff is say we're open, we're allowed to be open, we'll put all the precautions in place that we're told to do. But if you don't want to be here, fine, we'll try and support that in every way we can. And we're supporting that financially as much as we can. But there's a limit to what businesses can do. We're working with all the finance companies, all the suppliers, everything, trying to extend terms. We're working with our own customers and extending terms for them as well for payments to work with them. And we're just basically, we do a bi-daily update with the with staff and suppliers, keep them up to date, where we are, what we're doing. It's not without its difficulties. I'm not convinced that what funding is going to come through from governments. We are working with banks, raising funding, different things like that. But we've done a lot of damage control. We'll get through this. Determination will get through it. It is easier in the sense it's not regional or one country. It's everybody everywhere. So everybody's understanding on the whole. You get some people or not. So we're probably around about 50% production, which I think is a lot more than most companies, to be honest. And anybody can work from home, but it's actually made us, it's forced us to be more efficient. It's forced us to look at processes, look at different things. And all of a sudden, one of our production managers saying, I think I've got too many staff normally, you know, in this section because we're still managing to do X, Y, and Z. So there's positive things to come out of it, but it's difficult. My phone's been going a lot with the other company for people panicking, their businesses are closed or whatever it might be. I'm also hearing good news stories. There's one of the my ex-partner Nancy. She runs cafes and restaurants and things like that. She's gone. Of course, they've all had to close, but they started doing takeaways. So instead of doing £2,000 a week in takeaway, one of the organisations went up to £16,000 a week. So what she do? She's taking £1,000 or £2,000 of that profit a week and creating food parcels. And I was instead of sending you pictures of stuff going back to the Philippines and things like that. So I've seen people doing some good there with making the best of what's going on at the moment. It's difficult. It's very difficult. There's a lot of fear out there. But you've just got to work with it on a day-to-day basis.
Okay. Lynn, how are you getting on?
I suppose for me, there's either love or fear, and I momentarily slipped into fear when coronavirus first came out. From a business perspective, it's taken me 5 years to build this up, and I felt as if it was going to disappear in 5 minutes, and I could watch other people's businesses round about us all kind of disappearing or going into administration, and for a moment I was absolutely stricken. However, it had an opposite effect on our organisation. We're a frontline service. And our services went through the absolute roof. But I think that because I experienced that feeling, it then very quickly made me say, right, what can I do to help all the other businesses that are kind of struggling, inviting their staff to come work with us, inviting organisations to come work with us to deliver our frontline staff training, trying to share that workload out, trying to get other people that are stuck to, and then we can use the extra profits that we're making to put it out to other services, basically.
Brilliant. Well done. Well, listen, we've reached that time. Thank you very much for both of you coming on the show. And it's such a positive show with positive information. I mean, you're not only talking the talk, you're walking the walk and proving that this new way of approaching business is working. Before I let you go, Liam, give out your details there and let people know where they can find you.
Well, I'll just have fun as usual, Alan. I'll fire them up in your site afterwards.
Okay, no problem. Lynn, do you want to give out your website details of the Love Group and everything else?
So our website is love.org, and it is all hyphenated, so it's l-o-v-e.org.uk, and all our services are on there. And Gorgie Farm, Love Gorgie Farm, sits separately for that as well. So if you're interested in environmental projects, you would find it on the Gorgie websites.
Brilliant stuff. Excellent. Okay, guys, just stay with us there. I'm just going to go off to a musical break. Thanks a lot for coming on, and we'll be back after this.
Thank you.
You're listening to Alan James on Circle of White Light Radio and People's Internet Radio.
Okay, folks, that was Liam from THI Scotland and Lynn from the Love Group. She's the CEO of the Love Group. Fantastic, positive information from both Liam and Lynn, and the work that they're doing is phenomenal. And the way they took the actual Gorgie Farm and the things that Lynn was doing really from scratch. And it didn't come without the frustrations, you know, because the system is there to probably try and stop you. And I'm sure she had her hurdles that she had to get over to do what she did. But with the determination that she had, she's done fantastic work with the Love Group, and Gorgie Farm is up and running again. Obviously, when we're over this lockdown and it gets back to normal, because the locals love visiting that, and with the cooperative model that Liam has been using, you know, it's phenomenal. And I'm sure if I said to everybody listening to the show, right, if your job, if you were going into a job and you did a 4-day week, because there's 3 days there that you can stay with your family, you're getting a salary that's good for you and your family, not just a minimum wage or where you're struggling, but an actual salary that you can pay all your bills and maybe have a family holiday as well and a few other extras. And that if anything happened where your child was sick or somebody was sick, that the firm would actually pay you full salary while you're off. And that you have an input into the company and have a say in how the company is run. And then you get 5% of the profits for dividends at Christmas. I mean, put your hand in the air. How many people would put their hand in the air and go, yeah, I want to work for a company like that, that actually cares about me and has my own interest at heart. You know, I mean, who wouldn't want to work for a company like that, to be honest? So, you know, brilliant information. And this is the whole idea of what we're trying to do with THI, is to roll out the cooperative model and the cooperative model, and try and set up businesses down the line to actually run like that, so everybody's involved. Liam didn't actually say it there in the show, but his management of the businesses is very limited. He doesn't really have to get involved that much, because generally the staff run the business. And when you have a share in the business and you're involved in the business, you will take responsibility and you will get involved. And because at the end of the day, you know, it's paying your bills, it's paying your mortgage and everything else. So you want to do the best for the company, because it's going to be an interest to you to make sure that it works and there's business coming in, you know. So he's doing fantastic work there, and Lynn's doing fantastic work. And this is the whole idea. Now, as I said at the start of the show, there's a lot of naysayers, trolls and shills out there who will go on the attack because they're being paid to do that. And then there's other people who will just attack for because they have their opinion and they don't agree with it. You know, it's just the way the world is. It's the way things are. We just have to ignore these people and then move on and get on with it. And I'm sure, I know, you know, I'm based in Ireland and the radio shows run from Ireland, and our government is not the best and they have restrictions and they're stopping people doing X, Y and Z. But as Lynn said, turn it around to your benefit. Contact the people who are stopping it and ask them, how can I do this where it's happy, where it works into your model? How can we do it? What is the procedure? So if you want to set up a local food bank, what do I need to do to make sure that you're not going to come and shut me down? So this is the way of thinking. Again, we talk about critical thinking, we talk about future thinking, and this is what we need to be doing moving forward. We need to be doing it and taking the energy to do it. So there's an example, as I say, tonight of all the things that are going on. So Brilliant work, I have to say, brilliant work. And I know Liam is very modest and very humbled, and I've spoken to him privately on numerous occasions, and he helps so many people. But he doesn't, you know, stand up and start shouting and look how great I am. He's not like that at all. And that's what, you know, really makes him a really nice guy. But obviously on the business side, you know, when business has to be done, it has to be done. Okay, so next week. Next week I have an Australian chap called Danny Searle. Danny's been on the show before and he has a wealth of information. And he's going to tell us his thoughts on what he feels is going on regarding the world, energies, and, you know, Trump and all that kind of stuff. We'll be talking to Danny about that. And I have a second guest on, and I wanted this lady to come on because I've seen a few people say that they had an elderly relative that passed away, and it could have been a heart attack, a cancer, or pneumonia. And what they've done, what the HSE or the doctors have been doing, is putting down the death as a COVID-19 rather than the actual what they died of, right? Now, Katrina is a patient advocacy person, and she is on your side. So if there's medical malpractice, what she would do is she would sit in the room with you while you're speaking to the doctor. And if the doctor is trying to hoodwink you in any way, she will go, no, no, you can't do that, and you're wrong. So she's on your side. So I've asked Katrina to come on the show at the end of the show next week for people who have relatives, because I did get asked this, to do this. There's relatives that are, who have passed away, and they're being, the death cert has the wrong information on it. So I've asked Katrina to come on and to talk to us about her experiences with patient advocacy and dealing with medical malpractice and what people could do under that situation, because what I've been told, and what I was told last night, is that for elderly people, if they're diagnosed with the COVID-19 virus, that the HSC is telling the doctors, apparently, you know, this is what I heard. If it's wrong, I'm happy to change my mind and say it differently. But apparently, they're doing DNRs, which is do not resuscitate. So if they die and they basically don't resuscitate them and then put the death down to the virus. The numbers are not matching up. I was sent over figures there earlier on today, and the numbers of the people who died last year regarding the flu, it's near enough the same this year. If you compare the viruses compared to the flu, all right. So the numbers are not matching up. There's something going on, and we're not being told the truth. So you need to do the investigation. You need to check it out, and pass out, you know. If you come across any information, let me know, or let your friends and family know, because there is a mass awakening going on. Okay, right. So for myself, I'm going to say goodbye. Thank you to everybody who tuned in tonight on Circle of White Light Radio, on the chat room, and on People's Internet Radio. Well done. Thanks, everybody, for being interactive and talking and giving us your feedback. I think Barry Prince might be up on People's Internet Radio after myself there. So we tuned in. Stay tuned in to People's Internet Radio and you'll hear Barry there. Thanks to everybody there. And I hope you have a great week. And again, if you have any information, let me know. Email me. Nothing too big. You know, something quite quick is great. I can have a look at it and then we can comment on it. And I think that's it. Okay, so take it easy. Have a great one. And we'll talk to you again. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Circle of White Light Radio on CircleofWhiteLight.com, focusing on solutions and thinking different.